buried in the snow.
That's right, you know.
Good morning, everybody. Before we begin the regular part of our city council meeting, we have a question that we always ask the community. How are the children? The reason we ask this question is that we know that when children in a community are well, the community itself is well. And that in many parts of the world, when people greet each other, instead of saying, how are you, they ask, how are the children? And so each week we invite a young person in to talk with us about issues of concern to young people. And this morning we have Sophia. Sophia, could you please come forward? And the first thing you could do is help me pronounce your last name.
Kaskas.
Kaskas. Okay, great. Sophia is 12 years old and in sixth grade at Sowood Middle School. She likes backpacking, hiking. She likes Burnt Lake on the north side of Mount Hood. I don't know if any of you folks ever been to Burnt Lake, but the one time I was there, the horse flies were biting like crazy. Have you ever been bitten by the horse flies there? Anyway, you also have participated in a number of activities, including Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And last year, you went to King Elementary, where you helped paint a large mural of historical figures alongside of Portland State University students. So thank you for being here, Sophia, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mayor Potter and City Council members, for inviting me to speak with you today. First of all, I would like to thank and congratulate you for your unanimous decision to pass a resolution that would help end the war in Iraq. The first thing that I would like to suggest that you do is give more money to the schools. I think that the schools need more money for field trips, because without field trips, students lose their ability to get out of the classroom and learn. For example, last year I went to an aeronautics center and learned more in one day there than I would have learned in a whole week at school. One thing that you could do about this is propose a resolution that would increase funding for schools. Another thing that you could do is increase public awareness and support for the Stand for Children's organization. On a different note, I did a survey in my homeroom class of 26 kids, and the most important thing issues to them, and the most important thing to them was having another skate park in Southeast Portland, and the second most important thing to them was for us to do more to address global warming in Portland, Oregon, and for example, have the school buses run on biodiesel. And thank you, Mayor Potter and City Council members, for inviting me to speak with you today and for taking my concerns into consideration next time you have to make a decision involving these issues. Any questions?
Yeah, Sophie, I had one. You gave us each a sheet, and you had some percentages on there. What do those percentages reflect?
That was the survey, and that was the percent of kids that mm-hmm. chose that issue.
And this was from Sowood Middle School. How many kids did you interview?
26.
That's very impressive. I think Commissioner Leonard will be particularly pleased about the biodiesel run of school buses.
I was.
And if Commissioner Salzman is here, we are going to be building a skate park in Southeast Portland. It's on our list of 19 skate parks that we want to build around our city, because we know that skateboarding is really important to young people. Mm-hmm. So, again, thank you for being here, Sophia. Can we give this young woman a hand? And thank you, Mom, for bringing her. Appreciate that. City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Salzman? Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please proceed with the communication.
Agenda item 48, request of Tony Jones to address Council regarding 30% tax increment financing set aside.
Thank you for being here, sir. Please state your name when you speak, and you have 3 minutes.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Tony Jones. I am the chair of the Housing and Community Development Commission. I'm also a business lender with Shorebank Enterprise Cascadia, which was formerly Cascadia Revolving Fund. I'm also a resident of the city of Portland. I'm here to comment on the 30% tax increment financing proposal and the income guidelines that are being drafted at this point. First, I want to thank you, Mayor, Commissioner Stanton, and City Council for all your hard work on this particular issue. We think it's very important for the communities that we live in and serve. Right now, we know that Commissioner Stanton's office and PDC is working on the income guidelines, which we as a commission feel is vitally important to assure that there's balance and that low-income households are served. Commissioner Stanton's office and PDC staff approached us at the Housing and Community Development Commission meeting 2 weeks ago, and they presented a draft to us. We know it is in draft form. We know it isn't finalized, and we know that it's going to be presented to you next month. And what I wanted to do is take the opportunity to share my comments as a chair, but we have to vote on it as a group. But as we've looked at this, we want to give our comments. And my primary comment is, one, we want to applaud the council, Commissioner Stanton and his staff, for keeping the focus of the dollars toward households that earn 0 to 30% of median income. In light of this weather that we're experiencing, many of us are fortunate enough to sit in our warm houses and snuggle up and watch a movie. But we also know that there were many households that struggled, that didn't have housing or had substandard housing that they were living in and trying to survive. And this is part of the reason that Affordable Housing Advocates and HCDC has been very supportive of the 30% TIF set aside. What it does is provide a consistent stream of funding to make sure that each year in the city of Portland that we can make sure that we're continuing to address the housing needs for those who have the greatest needs, those that are at 0 to 30% median income. We're also very pleased that what we're looking at, the preliminary draft, that it does provide a balance and also provides opportunities to provide funding, increased funding for home ownership. We think that preliminarily think that the proposal that's been put in front of us is going to provide more home ownership units across the city as a whole, and will continue, and they're targeted for first-time home buyers and targeted at meeting the minority home ownership gap. And we think that that is of continued importance to make sure we have that balance and make sure that we provide housing for very low-income folks, as well as wealth creation opportunities for low-income families and for minorities that have the greatest disparity. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. And we appreciate what Shorebank does in terms of providing opportunities for a lot of folks, particularly low-income people, to achieve the American dream. So thank you for doing that. Appreciate
it.
That was the only communication item? Okay. Do any commissioners wish to pull in any items from the consent agenda?
Nope.
Does any member of this audience wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Agenda item 49, appoint John C. Mullis to the Portland Development Commission for a term to expire June 30, 2009.
John, Mark, could you please come forward? It's my pleasure today to bring before Council John C. Mullis, who I wish to appoint to the Portland Development Commission Board. I believe each of you had occasion to meet with Mr. Mullis through his leadership at the Columbia Pacific Building Trades Council, through his oversight of apprenticeship programs at the Oregon State Apprenticeship and Training Council. Mr. Mullis has served as a trustee on the Northwest Bricklayers Pension since 1990, overseeing a $75 million trust. and as a trustee for the Masonry Welfare Trust. He completed his bricklayer's apprenticeship in 1981. When I first sat down with John to talk to him about the Portland Development Commission, I was immediately struck by his forthrightness, his positive attitude, and the high value that he clearly places on collaboration and partnerships. It was at this very time that John began to work with the PDC board and staff, the Bureau of Labor Industry, union and non-union building trades, contractors, and developers to help the PDC develop an informed policy on wages and hiring requirements for projects that are not clearly subject to federal or state prevailing wage laws. This wage study was conducted over 5 months, and just last week, the PDC board adopted the recommendations which provide clear guidelines for applying prevailing wage rates to public-private partnerships and, at the same time, expanding apprenticeship opportunities and increasing contracting opportunities for minority and women-owned small businesses. John was critical to the success of the process and demonstrated exemplary leadership and commitment to providing and promoting family wage opportunities for everyone who seeks to work and succeed in the trades. I wish to thank John in advance for his service as a PDC commissioner for Portlanders, and I look forward to working with him closely over the next few years and believe that he will add an important dimension to the work of the PDC. Mark, did you wish to make a preliminary statement as well?
Sure, I'd love to, Mayor Potter. Mark Rosenbaum, PDC Chair. It's been my pleasure over the last few months to get to know John, and to echo the mayor's comments, he's a man who's forthright. He brings a high degree of integrity and fairness in terms of process, and the board looks forward to working with him and welcomes him amongst the membership. Commissioner Foran and Will Hoyt are snowed in, otherwise they would be here this morning, and Commissioner Cadre is sunning in Hawaii, so I'm not so sure he wishes to be here or not, although he sends his regards. In respect to your comments, Mayor Potter, we did last week pass sweeping changes to private-public partnerships and the application of prevailing wage. Commissioner-designate Molis has indicated a strong interest in working on the implementation of that policy, and we look forward to his leadership in that respect. And along with that, he has indicated a strong interest in looking at the minority hiring and apprenticeship goals that we'll be setting along with that. I was impressed during our testimony by the strong degree of effort that both that the unions have put into trying to recruit minority candidates into their midst. And we are certain that as we move towards disaggregated aspirational goals as it relates to minority hiring, that John's presence will be nothing but a help as we try to further that along with the union and non-union contractors that PDC works with. So we really appreciate his addition to the commission and strongly look forward to his addition to the process. Thank you.
Thank you. John, would you be so kind to introduce your family before you begin talking?
Sure. Right behind me is my wife, Debbie, and our son, Benjamin.
Welcome. Thank you, folks, for being here to support your loved one.
Our daughter, Megan, is a teacher in Springfield. Her and her husband live in Eugene, and she doesn't have a snow day today. So.
Thank you, John. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Potter and Commissioners Adams, Leonard, and Sten. And first, I'd like to thank Mayor Potter and Chair Rosenbaum for their kind remarks. It's greatly appreciated. I'd like to thank the mayor for appointing me to the Portland Development Commission. And I'd also like to thank all of the city commissioners for their support. During the past few months, all of you have reached out to me, welcomed me, and shared advice and support. And the same is true for PDC Chair Rosenbaum and the rest of the PDC commissioners. For that, I am grateful and, in fact, truly honored. I'm looking forward to this opportunity to serve our community. I'm pleased that the PDC has provided leadership and approved a construction wage policy for public-private construction projects at their meeting last week. Part of the policy calls for the creation of an oversight committee to oversee projects and apprenticeship goals and programs. I believe this committee will be very important to future progress and success, and I would be proud to be one of the commissioners charged with the implementation of this policy. I'm also interested in helping promote ideas and programs that would increase the number of legitimate and successful MBE, WBE, ESB, and veteran-owned contractors. Another issue that will receive my attention is affordable housing. Other than your family, your health, and a family wage job, I can't think of anything more important than a safe and affordable place to live. Part of the PDC's mission statement refers to quality jobs for all citizens. I'm committed to policies and programs that help create family wage jobs with benefits for all of the citizens of Portland. I truly believe that family wage jobs with good benefits are the backbone of a strong economy and essential to a strong and vibrant city. I know there are many other issues and challenges that the PDC faces, and I'm looking forward to learning about them and hope to be a productive commissioner. When I met Mayor Potter to discuss this position, at the end of the meeting, I told him that if he appointed me, I would promise to do my best in an honest and straightforward manner. I believe that's the most appropriate promise that I can make to all of you today, that if I am confirmed, I promise to do my very best to serve our community in an honest and straightforward manner. Thanks again to all of you for all of your support. If you have any questions, I'll do my best to answer them.
Questions from the commissioners?
Well, I don't have a question. I just wanted to express just how excited I am to have you on the PDC Commission. I think the model I look to is the Port of Portland that has had a labor representative on it for years now, and I think has added to the richness and how robust their conversations are about all issues. And I think you specifically bring to this effort some unparalleled skills, and I've been really impressed with you over the years about your dedication and your honesty and just being upfront, whether we agree or disagree. I like the fact that you're just very upfront and really smart, so I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Do we have a sign-up sheet for testimony? Is there anybody here who wishes to speak to this issue? Thank you, Mark. Thank you, John. I need a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Well, I join with Commissioner Adams. I'm very excited about this latest addition to the board, as I have been with each appointment since Mayor Potter has started appointing new members of the board. I think any organization, and it doesn't matter what kind of an organization it is, that has a group of people who may be diverse in terms of their culture and race runs a danger of not getting all its best information if it doesn't also have a diversity of thought. And I've been in organizations where it's been there has been a little, not as much discussion as there should on important questions. That sometimes leads to bad decisions. Where you have organizations such as I see the PDC evolving into, where you have great representatives of different communities in Portland, but also we're beginning to see great representatives of different economic interests in Portland. That's where I think we're going to get all of the best information on the table before decisions are made. I just really strongly believe, and it's kind of a guiding principle for me, that that every person that receives the same amount of information generally reaches the same conclusion. And it's that challenge of getting people to be able to hear different perspectives where they have information that others don't. So John has, I think, a background and experience that can bring a perspective that is going to be sorely needed on the PDC. It would be great if at some point we also had a PDC, for an example, to take this thought one further, a person that was a responsible member of the community that could only rent to live in a home. That, I think, would bring also to some of the discussions that happen at PDC, the important discussions, a perspective of a person who can't afford to buy a home, notwithstanding their best efforts. And I see us getting to that place where that happens. And those shouldn't be viewed by PDC as a threat, but actually, I think, an opportunity. to address needs that only can happen if you hear the message. And oftentimes the message is best by somebody on the inside than coming and testifying to a public body. So I'm really very encouraged by John being there. Everything that the mayor said and Mark said, I second. John is very thoughtful and collaborative. And also, I hope, will be outspoken when it's important to raise another perspective. And sometimes, speaking from some experience, if you're the only one raising that, it's not comfortable, certainly. But I also think it's important. And when you're the little voice in you says, you know, I'm the only one here that's thinking this, and nobody else is saying anything, it's easy not to, that's the time you need to speak up and say, you know, there's a perspective here I don't think that's being listened to. And that's the hard part, John, that you're going to have to, that any of us have to come to terms with. But I'm very encouraged by you being on the commission. I appreciate Mayor Potter appointing you. Aye.
Stan.
Well, I join in. I'm just going to be very enthusiastic to vote aye. I think, John, you're a perfect choice for this. And it's a tough position right now. I'm looking at Mark. There's a lot of things going on. And it's a time of great change. I think under Mayor Potter's administration and leadership, part of what's happening is we're discussing a lot of issues that were not discussed before. And we're having forums out in the open and pushing and pulling. And you know, there has been tension around prevailing wage and around the question of how do working people get represented. And why I'm so excited about this appointment is that I think, John, you've got the broad perspective to bring your background, but look at all of the issues. John, I had lunch last week and talked about affordable housing, about development. He recognizes that we have to spur the economy to have construction jobs. And so I think it's not about getting any one group represented, although there is plenty of room to have a labor voice. It's having a broader perspective. And there's been a push to say we need to get another commissioner who knows something about development. And I have argued, and I think the commission agrees, that somebody who's actually worked building buildings knows a lot about development and knows a lot about how things actually get done out there and what the real economics are as opposed to what's sometimes argued. And so I'm very excited about this. It's also a time in which I think we've asked the PDC to change its historical focus and mission. We haven't moved away from downtown projects. Those are still very important. We're building a little tram and a small area over on South Waterfront with $1 billion worth of construction. But we've also said we've got to get into the neighborhoods more. And it takes a different kind of leadership and a different kind of institution to be successful in Gateway and Interstate and Lentz than it does in the traditional downtown. And this organization's got to do both. And so we've got to be able to speak to people and work with them and build new connections, because you need a different type of infrastructure, both human and financing, to succeed in some of these new areas. And we need a tighter tie to this council, which is what we're working on, how we all collaborate, and to the neighborhood groups and to the two players that typically aren't part of what PDC needed to do in the years past. And so it's a question of taking an institution that's done a whole lot of good and needs to remain strong, but also adapting it so it can reach some new challenges. And that's a lot. We're not putting it all on your shoulders, John, but we think you're a key piece in helping us get there. So I'm very enthusiastic, and we'll stop talking and start working together. Aye.
Potter.
When the vacancy became open, we had a number of people apply for the position. You know, regardless of all of the attention in the media, it's a sought-after position. And I eventually got down to two people I thought were excellent candidates, and I went around and discussed them, both of them, with the council. Something that Commissioner Adams said that really struck me. He says, you know, we need somebody with some dirt under their fingernails. And what he meant was someone who had actually gone out and constructed buildings. So when I met with John, I checked out his fingernails. They were exceedingly clean, but I was so impressed with him. I had really not had that much dealings other than going to some of the breakfast with the unions, but I was just so impressed with his directness and honesty. And I impressed upon him that his background makes him a very unique individual, but that when he is a Portland Development Commissioner, he does represent all of the citizens of Portland. And that's a big burden. And I don't want John to feel like he has to carry the load for all of these issues on his shoulders. It's actually a responsibility of all of the Portland Development Commission, the commissioners, as well as the staff, to ensure that that we do a good job of taking care of people here in Portland, and that people do have that opportunity to have a living wage job and to have a home that they can call their own. So, John, you've got a big job in front of you, but I want to congratulate you and wish you well, Commissioner Mollis. I vote aye. I'm sure there'll be a few parties later, but right now we'll get on with the business of the Portland City Council. So, John, if you folks wish to leave, that's just fine. We understand. Oh, yes. Commissioner.
Congratulations, Commissioner.
Congratulations, Jim.
That's great.
Thank you all. You bet. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
You bet. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you. Kid.
Yes. Or a third grader.
Good to meet you, Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Thank you. Congratulations.
I'll see you at the PDC commission meeting, John.
Okay. Thank you.
That was the only time certain. Right. I'm going to move to the regular agenda. Please read the first item.
Agenda item 59, tentatively uphold appeal of Blue Sky Planning, the applicant's representative, and overturn the hearing officer's decision to deny a proposal to divide a 1.9-acre site into a 30-lot subdivision located at 13415 Southeast Foster Road, LU06-131422-LDS.
Council has before them findings. I need a motion to grant the appeal, overturn the hearings officer's decision, and adopt the findings as the council's final decision.
So moved.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 60.
Amend city code regulations for sidewalk use in high pedestrian use areas.
I would like to have this held over till next week so we can take testimony next week. There's some additional testimony to be taken. So if that's okay with the council members, we'll hold that over. Please read item 61.
Extend the 10-year property tax exemption for the West Shore Apartments by 1 year to facilitate the transfer of property from Pine Street Associates Limited Partnership to a nonprofit partner.
Second reading, vote only. Please call the vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. We're going to need a fourth? For the last one? Okay. Maybe he stepped out to grow a beard or something.
Well, no. It's there's a camera out there. Say anyway.
Hey, Harry, there's no reason
good
we
luck
can't
getting
start
him
the
in
hearing,
here.
Is there? There's no reason we can't start the hearing, is there?
No, you need four votes.
But we have a presentation, so. Perhaps we could give the presentation. Yeah.
Okay, why don't we go to the next item, and that you're it's just a second reading vote only, item 61.
Last
time. Did
that. It's the last
time. Oh, okay. Then read item 62.
Amend fees associated with fire regulations.
Commissioner Sten?
Thank you, Mayor Potter. I'll ask Chief Sprando and Scott Edwards to come up, and we'll give you a brief presentation. I want to walk through the fees where the council recall during last year's budget process, the council made a fairly tough decisions to raise fire fees as a way of helping stabilize the Fire Bureau's revenue. We were asked to raise approximately $714,000 annually. about half of that this year with what will be a little bit later than the January 1 implementation we had hoped. The basic strategy had been, and we're handing out the current proposal. Hey, Scott. The basic strategy had been to raise the biannual, so every two-year fee, of from $45 to $100. We worked fairly extensively with our prevention committee, with the Small Business Advisory Committee, and a host of other folks, and came to a conclusion that although it may not sound like a ton of money, raising $55 on every business actually started to negate some of the work that we're trying to do tomorrow on business income fees. And so we decided to do a more targeted fee increase, but had to keep the revenue generated the same as what was in our budget. And so the chief's going to walk through the details. But essentially what we did was put more of a focus on raising the fees for special permits, and that's why we took this back a little bit to work on it. We've adjusted a few things based on the meetings we've had over the last week. One of the things is we used to double the special permit fee if you gave us 24 hours or less notice, which happens, and there's an obvious incentive for us to know about special events more than 24 hours. The proposed top fee is now $1,500 for really big events. And so, for example, we said, well, let's make the penalty no more than $500 because doubling it seemed a little excessive. So we I think, adjusted it. It's all in this schedule here. I'll need to amend the ordinance to adopt this schedule if it's amenable to the council after the presentation. And so this would be our proposal as how to move forward. As I turn over to Chief Sprando, I would end by saying we still are actively exploring with Commissioner Adams the concept of folding in the entire inspection fee into the business license minimum. I think that's something that would be, as a selling point, much, much better for people, because rather than paying what will remain a $45 fee every 2 years, you would just get your inspection as part of your minimum business license fee. The idea would not be to give that away. It would be to build it into the business income reform so it's part of the minimum. Given that the council has at least, you know, tentatively decided to approach business income tax reform in two stages, with the minimums being the next stage after tomorrow's hearing, there really isn't any way to approach that. So I'm in the position of saying we need to move these up, and then what we'll need to do over the next couple of months is see if we can't find a way to fold them in. The special event permits and all those pieces, of course, would not be folded in. They would remain special fees. And so most of this has to do with those fees, and it's that $45 fee we'll be talking about with the business income tax reform.
So if I could ask, what is the percentage of the total fees collected that are the basic inspection fee?
I'm going to ask that.
Do you have that, Scott?
Chief Edwards maybe knows.
About 87%.
So the lion's share of the total amount is the fee. Okay.
Yes.
So it's all yours, John.
Thank you. Dave Sprando, Fire Chief, Portland Fire and Rescue. I want to apologize. Our operations manager is not able to be here today because of the weather, but I think we can answer all of your questions. With Commissioner Stan's very good lead-in, I'll make mine very brief. Originally, when we were directed to raise the $714,000, staff originally assumed that revenue increase would be generated entirely by the increased code enforcement fee. The advantage of that is it's simple and straightforward and would be easy to implement. A significant disadvantage that came to be seen was that it would fall most heavily on small business and small multifamily property and did not provide the appropriate incentives to comply with the fire code. To address these concerns, a number of alternative options were developed and evaluated over a several-month period. The final option recommended by the Prevention Advisory Council is presented to you today with one minor adjustment the commissioner just mentioned. It increases revenues through court enforcement, penalties, and discounts, and an increase in certain permit fees. This will have an impact on actually, at some point, on about 38,000 of our customers, but it is the most equitable way that we could develop to distribute these costs. I'm going to ask Deputy Chief Fire Marshal Edwards to just run you through quickly a PowerPoint.
As you mentioned, our current biannual fees consist of a base fee of $45 plus surcharges,
minus discounts that we give for sprinklers and no hazards found during the inspections. This surcharge is based upon a square footage or a number of residential dwelling units, and the discounts, as I mentioned, are applied for sprinklered and violation-free buildings. The biennial bills currently range from $35 up to a cap of $2,000. Our event-related permits consist of permits that are issued for festivals, concerts, trade shows, in large assembly venues and some small assembly venues. The current fees range from $100 to $500 depending on the size of the venue, but the fees do not cover the cost of the program, and they've only increased one time that I know of in the last 17 years, and that was in 1998. The council directed PFR to increase the code enforcement revenue by $714,000, and in the 06-07 budget proposal, it assumed that this revenue, like the chief said, would come from the raise of the base fee, $45 to $100, which would have been a very simple thing to do, but it put a huge impact on the small businesses. And both the staff and the commissioner's office were very concerned about that impact. So at that time, we developed a number of alternative revenue strategies. We looked at seven or eight of them, and those strategies addressed issues of increasing code enforcement base fee by a lesser amount, eliminating code enforcement discounts for the safe operation. One dealt with increasing penalty fees for the fire code violations, increasing code enforcement surcharges based on the size of the occupancy, and increasing public assembly fees. In August, we sent a letter out to assembly operators informing them of the possibility of their permit fees going from, in some cases, $100 all the way up to $2,500, depending on the size of the venue. As you can imagine, there was a few promoters and event operators that were not happy with that. We heard from five or six venue operators that were really not happy with it. So taking that information, we reworked the public assembly fee schedule and proposed a new range that covered from $150 at the low end up to $1,500 on the high end. And part of that reworking also, we found that there was an inequity in the way that the fees were distributed across the board in terms of the size of the venues. So I broke the sizes of the venues down into 50,000 square foot bands and came up with a more equitable formula to distribute fees across those bands rather than taking some of the big jumps that we did before, because the largest portion of the burden of the assembly fees was on the smaller venues, where they were paying on average about 40 cents per 100 square foot, and some of the larger venues were only paying 10 cents per 100 square foot. And that was just a method we used to kind of figure out the equitable formula. So now with the new formula, the smaller venues are paying 60 cents per 100 square foot, and all others are paying 50 cents. So it's much more even across the board. In early November, we consulted with the Prevention Advisory Council to discuss the alternative that we came up with. And the PAC is a longstanding group comprised of business and multifamily housing leaders, including representatives from BOMA, SBAC, Metro Multifamily Association. And they worked with us to design the original fee for a service code enforcement program back in 1998. And have worked with us ever since. Whenever we've made a change to the fees, we have cleared that through the Prevention Advisory Council. Their recommendations were to maintain our $45 code enforcement base fee, to lower the impact on small businesses, maintain the current enforcement discounts if you're sprinklered or have no hazards found during inspection. They did, however, feel that we should double the fee for any hazards that are found on a first offense from $10 to $20. also quadruple the penalty fees for those that still had hazards remaining when we go back to do a reinspection, from $25 to $100. Clearly, their emphasis was to put the burden on those who failed to correct the hazards. They also recommended that we double the surcharge for the that's based upon the square footage and number of residential units, and that went from $1 per unit and $1 per square foot to $2. And then finally, they approved the formula that we developed for the increase in the public assembly fees. The overall strategy of their recommendations was to limit the impact of small businesses, maintain safety incentives through discounts, and create new safety incentives by increasing the violation fees. On January 11th, we met with some interested assembly venue operators to discuss concerns that they had. This was a meeting that we had over at the convention center. There was quite a number of promoters and developers that were there to express their concerns. Part of that meeting, it was agreed by Chief Sprando that we would be willing to limit the penalty fee for a late filing for a permit to a $500 cap rather than just strictly doubling the original permit fee, which could have been up to $1,500 under this proposal. These are just some examples that we put in here that shows the impact on certain occupancies. You can see, for example, in a large professional office under the current fee schedule would pay $215 there. Here shows some of the some more examples of venues that would have violations. These are actual bills that we have sent out under the current fee schedule and what those same bills would be under the new proposal if they had the same violations. This is the breakdown of the
Can I ask you about that?
Yes.
So you go out and do an original inspection, you find hazards, and the very next inspection, if the hazards aren't abated, then they get the doubling of the fee?
No. When we go out and do the original inspection, there's what we call 8 common violations that they get, they're made aware of in a letter, and they're told that if those violations are not present when we arrive, they won't be written up for them. But if we find any of those 8 violations, then they will be charged $20 per violation group. For example, let's say illegal extension cords. We would not charge them $20 for 15 extension cords we find, and there would just be a single $20 charge for that entire violation group, regardless of how many violations we found within that group. Any violations written up, when we go back in 40 days to do the reinspection, if they are all abated, there is no additional fees. That's the incentive to get the violations done. However, if there are remaining violations, there is a $100 charge for the reinspection. And the violations under the current fee schedule, there's a $25 per violation group charge in addition to that reinspection fee. That $25 fee will go up to $100. Reinspection fee remains the same, but the violation fee will go from $25 to $100 per violation group.
So as a practical matter, how has that worked compared to what I'm familiar with, which is you write up the violations and, you know, identify what the hazards are. There's no charge the first course. You didn't have a letter going out either in advance.
Right.
And my recollection was it was really a long ways down the road before you ever started charging what used to be called reinspection fees. So as a practical matter, how does this work on the ground?
My appraisal is that the businesses have recognized that they do pay attention to that letter pretty substantially, which means that the hazards are normally corrected on a more frequent basis before we get there, which I think is in everybody's benefit. And Scott can probably speak more directly to that.
And as you recall, having been an inspector yourself at one time, you know that under the old system, it sometimes took years to get people to correct the violations because there was no incentive for them to do that. Remember the old $50 letter?
Absolutely.
Under the current system, I can tell you that we have 92% of the violations are corrected within 90 days.
I wouldn't have guessed that. That's actually encouraging.
It's actually been an extremely effective program.
That's excellent.
We have very few inspections that go beyond the first reinspection. Very few second or third reinspections. It works well.
Excellent.
And as I was saying, this screen here shows you what the current public assembly fees are. You'll note that under the current fees, there's two of them that are $150 and three of them that are $300. And that's because the current fee schedule has a span of $100K to $250K, all being the same fee. Part of my proposal was to break those down into 50,000K bands to more equitably apply the formula across the board of venues so that everybody's paying approximately the same amount per 100 square feet as across the board. In summary, our goal is 714,000. The code enforcement changes we expect to see due to the increase in the surcharge, a $393,000 revenue, $175,000 revenue increase for the violation fee increase, and the $96,000 revenue for the increase in the permit fees, and the final $50,000 is actually coming from plan review fees that are already in place. Fees that were, for example, part of the South Waterfront project that we know that are already there.
That's our information if there's questions.
I did want to ask about just your impression of I appreciate that explanation on the charges on the inspection fees. That was very interesting and you persuaded me that makes sense. But I am curious about what your reaction is to the $45 just kind of flat fee that's charged for inspections. I mean, at one time, I think, in fact, it's been a long time since I've had a discussion with anybody at the Fire Bureau about that fee, but at one time, my sense was not only did the business community not like it, but a number of the firefighters found it an impediment to gain access to places that they used to be welcomed into because people felt like as soon as they walked in the door, they got hit with whatever the fee was. Does that perception still exist?
Commissioner, what I would say is when the program started, it was definitely unpopular, and there's no question about that. People that were paying nothing for an inspection and found that they were paying $45 were not very happy. What I would say is there's a recognition now that it's part of the process. We don't get that many complaints about the base fee. If I said our firefighters were particularly enthused about going out and providing a feed inspection, they don't like it. I'm going to agree with that.
How come they don't like it today?
I think it's just because we started out with a service that essentially provided that as no charge, and now that and
because of maybe some feedback they're getting.
It is toned down very significantly. Now, I will tell you, we're fortunate we left that piece of this alone. We're going to have a number of not very happy folks when this goes out next time. So we will deal with a certain segment of the population who's going to get increased that won't be very happy. But I think the fortunate part about this plan is leaving that base fee essentially where it was.
And Scott, you said the total amount collected that represented the fee was 87% of the total. What is the total?
The total will be the $714,000.
Well, that is the toll that's generated from the inspection fee and permit fees and all that?
Currently, this last fiscal year, we collected just over $900,000. So this will be an 87%. The fee itself is I believe, an 89% or 77% increase over what we collect now. That additional $714,000 represents a 77% increase over the revenues we currently.
Okay, so what I'm asking is, what is the total amount?
The small business portion of that increase, or of all the fees collected, is about 87%. In other words,
and how much?
13% is from permit. plan review fees and the other fees that we collect as part of doing business.
I'm confused. Is the 87% of the 900 and some thousand, or is it of the 1.7?
Whatever amount we collect, it is represented. 87% of that comes from code enforcement fees.
In the current amount you collect before the increase?
In the current and also in the proposed.
And so the current amount is just under $1 million?
Correct.
So this
code enforcement fees, yes.
So this would be about $850,000 or so that it represents, the $45 fee I'm talking about.
The $45 fee and the surcharges that go into the code enforcement inspection fee is around $900,000 of the total.
And yes. I'm trying to just separate out the $45. I'm trying to get in
that one specific piece, and I don't think we have the specifically as what from the base.
38,000 inspections times $45 would be that
okay.
portion is collected, and I'd have to do the math here real quick to tell you
okay.
the percentage.
I had two questions. Are you done, Commissioner?
I
just had two quick questions. One is on public assembly fees. Does that include First Amendment assembly?
I know how you feel.
Protest?
No. Well, no, I don't think so. Unless they, if they're using a waterfront park and they would come down and take out a special event permit for waterfront park, then yes, it would. Any time that there's an event in Waterfront Park that's 500 people or more, they're supposed to take out a permit from the Fire Bureau. But
sometimes they don't.
Sometimes they don't.
So do you have a mechanism in here to waive those fees if it's appropriate?
We, currently, any of the waiving of the fees is at the Commissioner Sten makes that decision, what fees are waived. And that is not one of the ones now that is currently on the list of fee waivers would be First Amendment protests that I know of.
Yeah, we haven't had any real requests for that. We could look at it as part of, it could be as fees goes up, there's more desire to waive them. But it's actually not something that's come to me much at all.
I can't think of ever receiving.
Yeah,
but just I'm aware.
I hesitate to say never because my memory will.
I'm aware of a First Amendment event that folks decide not to get a permit, and it's conducted anyway. And I'm just wondering would you then go back to them and try to collect the fee or?
Well, police have a fee that they waive, right? So I would suspect that my starting point with having thought of it was we ought to use the same criteria they use,
okay.
and.
I don't believe that we have tried to recoup
sort of maybe that we just ad hoc don't collect
ad hoc events that have occurred. My belief is they've just occurred.
My recollection, the only fees that we have gone after the event and tried to collect were when we became aware of like rave parties and things that occurred without a permit that we weren't aware of.
Second question has to do with your amendment.
Yes.
I don't see a distinction between your amendment and what's already on the original sheet.
If the fee schedule that I handed out, if you look on page 4, which is the last page, at the bottom, the second line from the bottom, late fee, double the permit fee.
Yes.
That would have stood as just double the permit fee. Now there's a $500 maximum.
That's what it says on the original, too.
Well, then it may have gotten.
So maybe it was submitted as with the changes already in it. But this is the piece that we had with your presentation, and it's identical to the amendment. So I'm just want to make sure we're.
The amendment and the presentation should be the same.
Okay.
I think.
We sent the change through yesterday.
I think it got added after
your
yesterday.
Crack staff put it into your, into your packet.
Gave me to the. I was just going to say you're just too organized for
Friday.
You.
Even on a snow day, you got that.
And it happens about 30 minutes before you let them go home. So they did well.
Okay. Okay. Is there, is that the end of the testimony? Are there other questions from the commissioners? Is there anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up. Oh, did you wish to speak?
Okay, please come forward, sir. Do you please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Patrick Dynan. I produce a couple of shows here in town, and I just found out about this last Tuesday. It was emailed me by the Expo Center, and trying to get information about it was not easy. It was interesting when I did talk to the fire department, because, again, this is going to affect in event planning, we don't do something next week. We have to go anywhere from 6 months to 3 years out in doing events. I have an event coming up that last year had 37 nonprofit organizations and about 170 businesses in it. And I'm going to see an increase of potentially by this, depending on how they interpret it and how we work with it, going from $150 to $750. That's a $600 hit in the middle of a project. 3 months out. I did a little research and found that I guess one of the questions I have for the council is, you gentlemen just found, what, $6 million that was not in the budget, and you were passed out to some of the, I read where that was, some of the money was moved out to different projects. I just wonder how much of that went to the fire department on this issue here, since I was told by the fire department that you instructed them to go out and get new revenue, yet you had revenue that was a surplus and you turn around and gave it out to other projects where this project I would think would be important to you with fire prevention, especially last night when we saw two people that perished over a fire accident. I'm a little concerned about the priorities. But my mode of business is bringing shows into town. And when I heard about this, I'm in the process of looking to generate some new programs. And one of them would be one-day events this summer. And I just saw my budget go from $900 to $3,000. I mean, we're looking at increases here of 50 to 333%, gentlemen. And what you're doing is you may be a little ounce conscious and pound foolish, and that it will take away from revenue from the hotels that are in here, the people that are spending. This show that I'm doing in April has people coming as far away as Longview and Albany, national companies, et cetera. We have 37 nonprofit organizations in there, and a lot of those people stay here. And my projection was to grow that building, that project, but I couldn't afford it with the prices. I mean, the last 3 or 4 years, the economy has not been good for trade shows. We have seen some real big hits. I had a 21% reduction in my gate last year because of sunny weather. The things that we face, and seeing these, I mean, you're going to find a lot of entrepreneurs who are going to say, thank you, but I'm not going to do it here. I'll go look at Hillsborough. I'll go look at Vancouver. I just, as I say, gentlemen, I understand you need to generate revenue, but you may be causing some problems with what revenue you're going to lose by businesses not coming in. Or I would not want to take a chance. I'm an entrepreneur. And to see the increases of $2,100, that puts that project on a critical basis because it wouldn't be profitable the first year anyway. So I have to now look at an additional $2,100. It isn't advantageous to bring people in or take the chance, because it's the front money. We don't get there's nothing in here to reduce it if we don't go the size. So I hope you consider that this is increasing cost to both exhibitors and guests coming in. It'll reduce people's visiting our city, less revenue from other tax related. It'll cause some people, and you're seeing it now going over to Vancouver's facility. Hillsborough's talking about adding one. It'll show in your visitors, your conventions coming into town and cost factors. Less rental fees, and it'll be less rental fees collected by the Expo and the convention centers. So if $96,000, I can probably within a couple of weeks give you a good outline of what it's going to cost you, and I guarantee it'll be more than $96,000. I don't mind paying a fair share, but I'm looking at just this one loan.